quiet, numbskulls. I'm broadcasting.
This is Stuart Venner. I tell it as I see it, and I see it as it is.
It was interesting, but it was also stupid.
This is Stuart Venner. I want to welcome you to this week's show. We've got a really great lineup of guests on this show. We're talking to Michael Russer. Michael has erectile dysfunction, and we're going to talk about how he survives and how he actually enjoys life. We're talking to Nancy Hartwell. She's going to discuss human trafficking. There's a lot of slavery going on today, more than you would imagine. We're talking to Xander Sprague. He's going to talk about making lemonade out of lemons after losing a sibling. And along the same line, we're talking to Judy Flickinger, who is a hospice expert and is going to talk about end-of-life care. And finally, we're having a fun conversation with Ron Hood about the old-time radio shows. Please stay tuned. I know you're going to love the show.
She told me he was the par. E.D., E.D., talking about some E.D., P.P., P.P., blood not flowing to his weenie. She told me he had drank too much. He didn't respond to her touch. She ended up walking a homer, 'cause he couldn't maintain a boner. E.D., E.D., talking about some E.D., P.P., P.P., blood not flowing to his weenie. The next day he went to school. All his friends thought he was a fool. He told everyone she was a whore. But the truth is his penis doesn't work anymore. E.T., E.T., talking about some E.T. Not flowing to his weenie.
Yeah. I've got a very interesting guest online. We're talking to Michael Russer. Michael is going to tell us how ED learns to more intimacy. ED meaning erectile dysfunction. Michael, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Stuart. It's a great pleasure to be here with you.
The same here. Now, I know you're a cancer survivor. And for what I'm reading a little bit about you, that after your cancer surgery or whatever treatment you had, you actually then have experienced erectile dysfunction.
Yes. In November of 2011, I was diagnosed with prostate cancer. And in my family, cancer of any kind is usually fatal. So I opted to have the most radical form of treatment, which is a radical prostatectomy, which is a complete removal of the prostate.
Okay.
And as good a job as my surgeon and his team did, they were not able to get it all. It was a good thing I had it out right away because it was much worse, much more aggressive than the biopsy originally indicated.
Really? Wow.
Yes. And then I went through about 7 weeks of daily, 5-day-a-week intensive radiation, and that still wasn't enough. However, right now it's under control, and so I'm at it's kind of a friendly truce with the cancer, and so it seems to be under control. But as a result of all those treatments, I was rendered completely and clinically impotent. And for many men, that's worse than the threat of the cancer.
Because I can't think of anything more worse happening to me.
Yeah, it defines, for many men, it defines who we are as men. And our very reason for being in terms of relationships and so on.
Are you married?
And so, pardon me?
Are you married?
I was married. Ironically, 2 months prior to being diagnosed, I had ended a 24-year marriage where the last 11 or so years,
wow,
we were more roommates than anything else.
Okay.
My ex-wife and I still cared greatly for each other, and she was a wonderful wife and mother, but we grew apart, and we knew we were going to make this shift after my son, our youngest son, went off to college. Well, you know, now I find that I'm struck impotent, and so I had to go through the whole four stages of loss all over again, and starting with disbelief.
Now, you have a partner now that you...
I do have a partner now, just a wonderful woman who...
Now, you say that you have more intimacy now, and that's what I find fascinating. How is that possible?
Well, here's the thing, and this is what I discovered. My ED actually was the biggest gift to me and my partner's intimate life than we could ever have possibly imagined. We literally just finished celebrating our one-year anniversary together. And
good for you.
When I met her, I had not been with a different woman in 30 years other than my wife. And I was very upfront with her. I said, sweetie, this isn't happening. And I'm pointing down my crotch. And when it appeared that we were going to go further than just being friends, I said, are you willing to explore something, ways of being intimate, other ways of being intimate? And she said, of course. And what came out of that was nothing short of extraordinary.
Really?
And the best way I can describe it is this, is that men and women are hardwired, both biologically and culturally, primarily for procreation. And yet that wiring gets in the way of what our hearts truly yearn for, which is deep, abiding connection, emotionally, physically, even spiritually with each other. And what the ED did for me, and in fact, I'm not unique in this, about research has shown that 15% of couples affected by erectile dysfunction experience this. What the ED did for me is essentially short-circuit that wiring and allowed me as a man to slow way down and experience and let's just say match my partner's sexual response profile. And as you know, female sexual response profile is very different than a man's. And by slowing down, it allowed us to experience levels of emotional and physical intimacy that actually stagger the imagination for people who are functioning normally. And I say this with all humility. I'm not there to brag in any way. I will say this to all male listeners out there. If you're not affected by ED, you can do things that I will never be able to do again. Yet, I will also say that you can have access to the levels of emotional and physical intimacy that will literally can go beyond your imagining.
Well, you could get a penis pump, couldn't you?
Yeah, I could, but I don't want to.
You don't.
No, for two reasons. Number one, there are potential very serious side effects to that.
That I didn't
know. But actually, the bigger reason, and this is going to be really hard for a lot of men, no pun intended, but really hard for a lot of men to really wrap their heads around. Now, women will understand what I'm about to say, but men are going to have a hard time with this. I really don't care if it ever comes back, and neither does my partner. And just to illustrate what I'm saying, I ran into a friend of mine, a female friend of mine, who indicated that her boyfriend at the time was functioning normally, and they had a normal sex life, and then he was temporarily struck with ED. And this is what she said. He became the most incredible lover ever.
Really? Now what do you do to satisfy her sexual needs?
Pardon me?
Your girlfriend, your companion, she must have some sexual needs that need to be satisfied.
Yeah. Oh no, we make love, and I.
Can you share us what you do?
Well, yeah, sure, of course. Well, first of all, let me just tell you the results. First of all, we spend a minimum of 2 to 4 hours of time making love.
Wow, that's more
and
than I do.
During that time, she will climax a minimum of 5 to 7 times. Occasionally 8 or 9 times, and one time she actually climaxed 13 times. So prior to this, and she's postmenopausal, I will tell you.
Really?
Prior to this, she had trouble even lubricating, and now it's copious, and ironically, we don't need it because there is no penetrative sex, and we spend close to an hour or two just leading up to genital stimulation, which is typically oral. So that we develop that very strong emotional bond between us and that caring. And you got to remember, by the time in intercourse, by the time the man issues his last grunt, rolls over and falls asleep, the woman is just getting warmed up. So my ED gave me the opportunity of slowing way down and focusing and being totally present just for her. So I'll spend an hour just caressing her, just massaging her, and none of this genital to begin with. In fact, it will not work if it's genital to begin with because it takes that much warming up.
Right.
But once we get to the point where we are able to orally stimulate each other, she is explosively orgasmic, and to the point where I've been almost asked to leave where I live.
Now, are you able to be stimulated orally?
Yes, but it took us 4 months. Now, this is another thing that's going to be hard for men to understand. It took us 4 months of practice for her to get, because I'm fully flaccid. I don't get hard, period. None of the drugs work.
Okay.
It took us 4 months for us to get to the point where I can actually climax. Now, you might be thinking, this guy must be climbing the walls. Here's his partner exploding climactically, and it... But I tell you, it's not that way at all. I was, the whole approach to our making love was so different. And it was, I just kept shaking my head and saying, how is this possible? Because I was so fulfilled, so, in a sense, satiated, even though I was not able to climax in the first 4 months.
You
just
can actually
by giving
climax
her
now?
That pleasure.
Without your prostate, you're able to climax?
Oh. Let me share this for the folks out there who are contemplating or already had prostate removal, prostatectomy. We don't have an off switch. So once you learn how to climax, just talking from my personal experience, it is far, far stronger, more intense, and far longer lasting than a traditional climax where there's
wow.
an ejaculation.
Michael, how can other folks learn what you've learned? Do you have a book, or is there something you're doing to help
yes,
them?
There's a book that's coming out in 2014. It's called Hardly Broken.
That's good.
And if you go to hardlybroken.com, people can pre-register for it. And by doing that, they're going to start receiving weekly tips from me, starting with emotional intimacy, how to build the emotional intimacy, which is the very foundation of everything I've talked about here. Without that, I don't care how great a sex a couple has, it's going to go away. With my partner and I, it just keeps getting better. And so they can go to hardlybroken.com, pre-register, and they'll start receiving gender-specific tips on how to build this kind of intimacy. Because the other thing I've discovered, especially speaking to women, is that there's a kind of a lack of intimacy epidemic out there, and a lot of couples are feeling very unfulfilled in terms of emotional and physical intimacy.
Well, that is
what I have to share in the book
remarkable.
Actually addresses that.
That is remarkable. Maybe you should put on demonstrations.
Well, yeah. Well, that's probably not going to happen. But there's a lot that can be said. First of all, in connecting at the emotional level, and there's an entirely different transformation I went through prior to even meeting my partner, and that's
well,
I
Michael,
went from being a
thank you very much for coming on the show, and everyone out there, this was Michael Russer, and you go to hardlybroken.com, and if you, a man or a woman who has a husband or a partner that is suffering with ED, erectile dysfunction, your life could really get a lot better. Michael, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Are you stuck with a timeshare? Did you attend the presentation and were seduced and enticed into buying that great vacation and investment? Now you're in the terrible position of trying to figure out a way to get out of that mess. You're not alone. For over 15 years, BuyYourTimeshare.com has been helping people like yourself get out of timeshare ownership. The fact is, there is no resale market. Unscrupulous telemarketers call you and say they have buyers waiting, and the next thing that happens is you give them hundreds of dollars for an ad, and you'll never hear from them again. Another fact is that an identical timeshare to yours is being offered on eBay for a dollar, and no one is buying it. If you want out of your timeshare, I urge you to go to buyyourtimeshare.com or call them at 877-94-HELP-ME. That number again is 877-94-HELP-ME. buyyourtimeshare.com. That's buyyourtimeshare.com. 877-94-HELP-ME. 877-94-HELP-ME.
Welcome back to the show. Folks, I have Nancy Hartwell on the phone. Nancy's quite an interesting lady. She's an author. She's written several books about human trafficking. And she's actually an expert and has done a study of human trafficking for quite a long time. Nancy, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
You know, something we don't think about is slavery. And do you say slavery is really going on today and big time?
Yes, even though it's been outlawed practically everywhere, there are unfortunately more slaves on Earth right now than at any other time in human history. Experts estimate between 25 and 30 million worldwide.
Oh, my God. You mean like sex slaves or other kind of slaves? What kind of slaves?
Not just sex slaves, although that's a lot of the focus, of course, but some in agriculture, some in service industries, light manufacturing, rug making, etc. They're in a number of different areas, but of course, the sex industry is one of the major focuses of the modern day slave trade.
Can I apply to be a sex slave? I don't think they'd want me. No, but seriously, where is this happening, and what areas is this occurring?
Okay, well, most slaves are in Southeast Asia, but there it's a domestic market, like Filipino on Filipino or Malaysian on Malaysian. That's also becoming a huge problem in Eastern Europe, and the modern-day slave trade, where girls are actually stolen and shipped to stock harems and brothels in the oil-rich states on the Persian Gulf. There's no other way to describe it but the modern-day slave trade.
That is horrible. And where are these girls, or men or women, or where are they abducted from primarily? Where do they come from?
Mostly from Northern Europe, but also from the United States.
Really?
Tall blondes are especially prized on the Gulf, and a really good-looking tall blonde can retail for more than $100,000. And if there is a market, somebody will be determined to supply the market.
That's unbelievable. I remember as a child, I used to joke about it, but my grandmother, rest her soul, she was born in Philadelphia, and that was back a long time ago. And she would never sit with her back to the wall in a Chinese restaurant. She was always afraid that some panel would open up and she'd be in Shanghai or something. Well, I used to say, consider yourself flattered.
It's not for nothing that Shanghai became a verb.
But I guess stuff like that really did happen, but you're saying it's happening today and even more.
It is happening today. Hundreds and hundreds of girls are shipped to the Persian Gulf every year, and I'm even beginning to suspect thousands.
Really?
And the problem will continue to grow, because as these countries make more and more and more money, the people have more and more disposable income, and after you have a palatial home and a fleet of Maseratis and a stable full of thoroughbreds, what else are you going to buy?
It's unbelievable. And where are these people abducted, like off the streets, or how does it happen?
Well, there are several common techniques. One is just an online proposition where they try to go after, you know, a young teenager, say 13, 14 years old, or they'll place an ad in a website that teenage girls frequent, promising a glamorous job as a model or in a hot new rock band or a small part in a movie. You know, what do teenage girls dream about? And they will zero in on them and lure them to an office and find out if they have come alone and unprotected, and boom, then they're a statistic.
My God, that's unbelievable. Is there anything being done worldwide to stop this or not?
Well, yes and no. The efforts have not been terribly successful. I mean, like, how do you stop burglary? You probably don't. But you can reduce the probability that your own house will be burglarized if you take certain steps. The legal environment is improving. It used to be that the victims of trafficking would be criminalized. Here they have been forced into prostitution, and then they're the one who are in big trouble rather than the pimp. And that is improving pretty much around the world. However, once these girls have been stolen and trafficked, even domestically for purposes of prostitution, they have been stolen at a very vulnerable and a very impressionable age.
Sure.
And they have been abused so severely, emotionally, physically, financially, that they don't trust anybody. And it's very difficult to rehabilitate them, even if they're rescued, just because they've been brutalized in so many different ways. I was talking to a guy the other day who runs a shelter for recovering victims of trafficking. He said, "Nance, I used to work with the homeless, and what the homeless go through is trivial compared with what has happened to these girls. Most homeless people have at some point have had a normal life that broke, but these girls don't know what a normal life is. Many of them were abused at home, they ran away, and then
amazing.
They were abused even more severely on the streets, and they don't even know what a normal life is. It's really,
anyone out
really
there that's listening to the show, if you have teenage daughters or sons, and, you know, you got to monitor what they do, what they go on the Internet, right? And,
yes,
and you
please.
Can't let them
they
you
won't
know, get into these
it.
Chat rooms and answer these glamorous ads, because you could end up in a
please,
sex slave.
Parents.
I'm applying right now, incidentally. As we speak.
Yes, you need to monitor your children's social media sites. They won't appreciate it. They'll think you're being mean, but you may very well save their lives.
Absolutely.
And one friend of mine says that it's a good idea to do it with your youngster so that they know that you're interested in what's going on, and you can help point out some red flags that even a savvy 14-year-old would not pick up on.
This has been a fascinating interview. Nancy, in the last couple minutes, can you tell everyone about the books you've written and how they could find them and learn more about
this?
Yes,
thank you. They're available on Amazon.com. It's the series, it's the human trafficking series. The first one is called Harem Slave. The sequel is Prince Ibrahim's Favorite, and then there's a companion volume called Voices from the Harem that talks about individual stories of how these girls were abducted, how they ended up in the harem, and what they think about it.
Now, your books, are they fictionalized, or are they fiction based on truth, or what are they exactly?
They're fiction based on truth.
So
I can't classify them as nonfiction because I don't have copies of police reports and names and dates and everything, but I've been collecting stories for more than 40 years, and I'm convinced that most of these accounts are actually true.
Fascinating.
So they're fictionalized, but based on true accounts.
Well, everyone out there, we're speaking to Nancy Hartwell, and you go to Amazon and you look for Under Human Trafficking, and she has books Harem Slave Author and Prince Ibrahim's Favorite. And what was the last one?
Voices from the Harem.
Voices from
the Harem. They're all bestsellers in the Eastern drama category.
Should be a movie, actually.
They would make wonderful movies.
I bet they would. Nancy, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Are you stuck with a timeshare? Did you attend the presentation and were seduced and enticed into buying that great vacation and investment? Now you're in the terrible position of trying to figure out a way to get out of that mess. You're not alone. For over 15 years, BuyYourTimeshare.com has been helping people like yourself get out of timeshare ownership. The fact is, there is no resale market. Unscrupulous telemarketers call you and say they have buyers waiting, and the next thing that happens is you give them hundreds of dollars for an ad, and you'll never hear from them again. Another fact is that an identical timeshare to yours is being offered on eBay for a dollar, and no one is buying it. If you want out of your timeshare, I urge you to go to buyyourtimeshare.com or call them at 877-94-HELP-ME. That number again is 877-94-HELP-ME. Buyyourtimeshare.com. That's buyyourtimeshare.com. 877-94-HELP-ME. 877-94-HELP-ME.
I can find one of them that's silver lined. I don't care, it can rain, all it wants on my parade. Because when life gives me lemons, I make lemonade. Lemons, I make lemonade.
Welcome back to the show. I've got a great guest on the line. We're speaking to Xander Sprague. Xander is going to tell us about making lemonade a positive pathway after losing a sibling. That's got to be a pretty tragic thing for anybody. Xander, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Oh, it is my pleasure, Xander. Tell us a little bit about your story.
Well, you know, 16 years ago, my older sister, Lucy, was murdered in her apartment in Chicago.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and obviously there were many things in my life I thought I might experience, but losing my sister really wasn't one of them. If you think about it, your brother or sister, that's the longest relationship you're going to have in your life. And unfortunately, my relationship with my older sister ended way too soon.
Did they find out who did it?
They did. The man who did they caught the man who did it right away. There was never any question. And 10 days later, he hung himself in the Cook County Prison. So,
well, maybe that's a good thing.
I kind of view it in a karmic way that we're kind of even, because he strangled my sister and he died by strangulation. So, you know.
Well, it's an eye for an eye, that's for sure. Now, you had another loss I'm reading about you and your family, where your sister-in-law as well died.
Yeah, my sister-in-law five years ago passed away from a massive cerebral hemorrhage at 35. And that was also quite surprising and devastating. At the time, I had a three-year-old daughter, and I had to talk about death with her in a much bigger sense than we normally do, where you talk about like your goldfish dying or something.
When you're that,
like that
age, you shouldn't have to go through that. And
no.
And what are you doing now to help other people? Because there's probably a lot of people out there that have been through the similar, maybe not murder, but have had a loss of a sibling like this.
Yeah, you know, I'm on a mission to help other sibling survivors to define their loss, choose a positive pathway, and live a meaningful life. Just because I lost my sister and my sister-in-law doesn't mean that my life ended. I feel that the best way that I can honor both of them is to go out and do good work in their names and help other people.
That's wonderful. You know, a lot of people not only losing a sibling, but I don't think there's anything worse than a parent losing a child. It's the same kind of effect.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're supposed
to
outlive your kids.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And what are you doing to help people like this?
Well, you know, I wrote a book called Making Lemonade, Choosing a Positive Pathway After Losing Your Sibling, which is a short book, but it's packed with information to help other sibling survivors. I've got got 30 Days to a Positive Pathway, which is a home study course, and I also offer grief coaching to people who really want someone to talk to who understands and can help them get their life back on track, to go from heartbreak to happiness, and find that they can laugh again.
Do you have any of this geared towards children, too? Because, you know, there's so much horrible things going on in this world today.
There are. Right now, I don't have things for smaller children. I really sort of focus, so I say 15 and up. Mm-hmm. The younger children is much more challenging because there's so much of a conceptual idea of death.
Right, they don't understand that, of course. Well, Xander, how can people get your book and learn more about this? Because I think this is pretty important for anybody who finds himself in this horrible situation.
Absolutely. If people want to go to lossofasibling.com, that's my website, and that will get you to my website. You can buy the book. It's available in softcover, hardcover, and e-formats for the Kindle, the Nook, and iBooks.
Well, God forbid anybody needs your book, but unfortunately there's a lot of people out there that do. And again, if you're in that terrible situation where you have lost someone close to you, and like a sibling or a child, even, I recommend everybody read Xander's book. Once again, Xander, could you give us that website?
Sure. It's lossofasibling.com.
All right. That's lossofasibling.com. And again, we're speaking to Xander Sprague, and his book is Making Lemonade, A Positive Pathway After Losing a Sibling. Xander, thank you so very much for coming on the show. And again, I hope I never need your book, but if I do, God forbid, I'm going to buy it.
Are you stuck with a timeshare? Did you attend the presentation and were seduced and enticed into buying that great vacation and investment? Now you're in the terrible position of trying to figure out a way to get out of that mess. You're not alone. For over 15 years, BuyYourTimeshare.com has been helping people like yourself get out of timeshare ownership. The fact is, there is no resale market. Unscrupulous telemarketers call you and say they have buyers waiting, and the next thing that happens is you give them hundreds of dollars for an ad, and you'll never hear from them again. Another fact is that an identical timeshare to yours is being offered on eBay for a dollar, and no one is buying it. If you want out of your timeshare, I urge you to go to buyyourtimeshare.com or call them at 877-94-HELP-ME. That number again is 877-94-HELP-ME. BuyYourTimeshare.com. That's BuyYourTimeshare.com. 877-94-HELP-ME. 877-94-HELP-ME.
Welcome back to the show. I'm speaking to Judy Flickinger. Judy is a hospice nurse, or she was a hospice nurse for 12 years of her life. And we're going to talk to Judy about end-of-life care. It's getting very close for me, I'm afraid. Judy, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm happy to be able to share what I have learned.
Well, please share it with us. You know, I have had one experience with a relative in hospice, and I have to say it was wonderful. They treated people really wonderfully, but it's very sad.
Well, I've been doing this work for 24 years, and what I've learned through these years is that nothing is as important when you're dealing with an end-of-life issue as the human spirit. And that's the person inside of you.
That's true.
If you can keep that alive and well, very often your end of lifetime is so much more wholesome and good for you, and wonderful things can happen. My patients taught me this.
Really?
And it jumped out at me when I first started doing hospice. And no one else was talking about it. So I started teaching classes. And it's accumulated over the years into a book that I've written called Spirit Matters.
Really?
And the subtitle is How to Remain Fully Alive with a Life-Limiting Illness. It's kind of like a personal trainer for death and dying.
Well, can you give us a few of the highlights that you would recommend that people should do when they're facing this with a relative or a loved one?
Well, there's a few things people need to know. One is that we do a miserable job in our country on end-of-life care. We've become so technological that we're almost like the ever-ready batteries. They can just keep us going.
Yeah, and I mean, sometimes it's so miserable to just hook people up to machines because there's nothing there.
There's a chapter in my book titled Measuring the Benefit Versus the Burden. And if the burden becomes so great, in other words, the results of treatments, and it's limiting your life.
Well, you're limiting your quality of life. There is no quality.
Right. Then it's time to stop those treatments, because if your illness is life-limiting, why not spend that time enjoying yourself?
I agree.
And that's possible. In fact, the New England Journal of Medicine, about a year and a half ago, published an article, and I don't know whether your listeners are aware of the fact, but that's kind of like the Bible of the medical community. It's a big, prestigious publication.
Uh-huh.
And this is what they said in the article. If you have aggressive comfort care, meaning hospice, as opposed to aggressive curative care, meaning chemos and all those whatever.
Well, you know, I personally think curative care is good, but just keeping someone alive on a machine is not curing anything.
Well, it's not just the machine, though. It's the aggressive chemos. When someone is, if it's not doing any good and it's making their quality of life so poor, the New England Journal of Medicine said, if you stop that aggressive treatment and just go on aggressive comfort care, hospice, with cancer, you can extend your life by 3 months.
Really?
Now, see, I've known that, and I'm sure they spent millions of dollars for that study. And they could have asked me, because I wouldn't have charged them a dollar. When you help people feel better, very often they do better. And people don't realize, but we have hospice patients that are out traveling, they're working, and they're going on leading their life and living their life because we help them feel better.
I wasn't aware of that. I thought hospice was just the very end.
Oh, no. You know, dying can take weeks, months, or even years.
Really?
And it's how you spend that, what I call dying time, how you spend that time keeping your spirit alive. That's what matters the most.
Well, I agree with you there. I mean, there certainly should be some quality of life.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Judy, you've been fascinating. Can you tell us again about your book and how people can get it?
Yes, it's called Spirit Matters, How to Remain Fully Alive with a Life-Limiting Illness. It's available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble from my publisher, Tate Publishing, which is T-A-T-E. And it's a little book. It costs $12.99, but it has valuable information in it.
Oh, I'm sure that it does. It's something that everybody needs. It's inevitable.
Well, especially down here in Florida, where we're all a little older. But it's also for baby boomers, because they have parents and grandparents facing some of these issues.
Well, Judy, I really thank you for coming on the show, and I think it's been very enlightening for everyone. So again, we're speaking to Judy Flickinger, and I think everyone needs to read this book, Spirit Matters, How to Remain Fully Alive with a Life-Limiting Illness. And something, unfortunately, it's all something we're probably all going to face at some point. Judy, thank you so much for coming on the show.
You're so welcome. Thank you. Derp, derp,
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you are about to see is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Welcome back to the show. I've got a real fun guest online. We're speaking to Ron Hood. Ron's passion is old-time radio, and I want to say it's also my passion. Ron, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yeah, I think the old radio actors were probably best actors of all, because they didn't have that visual like you get in movies or television, so they really had to paint a whole picture, didn't they, with their voices?
Yeah, they did. And what's interesting is not only did the actors have to be good, but the writers as well. And they had to put a stellar effort on every program they did so that the actors had something to work with.
Yeah, you know, back in the early 40s, I don't know if Jason told you, our producer, that my mother was a radio actress. She was at KFWB. And she was on the
Hermit's
Cave.
Yeah, you mentioned the Hermit. And
Inner Sanctum, a lot of those old shows.
Yeah, you know, I would absolutely love to have a talk with her if she's still with us.
No, she's been dead about 12 years now. But but she was a good actress.
Just, you know, a lot of those old actors, they're gone. They're leaving us, and it's sad because they're just so talented.
She was. I remember some of her stories, though. She never liked Bill Conrad. William Conrad and Gunsmoke. Because he got her drunk. She always hated him.
he was pretty amazing. He actually did a lot more radio than people think. He was on all kinds of different programs, and even had his own radio show called Escape for a while. So
yeah, he was a great actor, except when they started the TV show of Gunsmoke, he was not able to be considered for the part. He went for the audition, but he's a big fat guy. If you remember, he was on Cannon, the TV show.
And yes, I remember it well.
He just didn't fit the image of Matt Dillon.
They didn't. And, you know, John Wayne had a lot to do with the selection of Matt Dillon for the TV program.
Really? It was Jim Arness, I believe, who played it.
Oh, Jim Arness. No, John Wayne picked Jim Arness to do that role and really advocated for him to be on there.
Well, he was good in the part.
So, yes, he was.
So what shows do you like the best?
I am partial to detective shows. I like the idea of listening and trying to figure out along with the detective what's going on. I'm also a big fan of Westerns, like Gunsmoke, and some of the other ones that Have Gun, Will Travel.
Yeah, that was a good show. That made a good TV show, too.
Yes, it did. It did.
But the old radio one, that was John Daner. He was very good in that part.
Yes, he was. And John Daner was a great actor in the radio days. He did a lot of different roles on all over the place.
He did. And one of my favorite detective one is yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
You know, actually, one of the longest running and the very last program to ever be on the considered part of the golden age of radio. He was one of the last ones. That particular show was one of the last ones to go off the air.
It was a
good
show.
People still loved it.
And I love Dragnet, too.
Yeah. Jack Webb, who was the star of that one, he had a program that where he played a gumshoe, and the dialogue in some of his earlier stuff was outstanding.
Yeah, he was very, very good. Well, I'm glad to speak to someone who has the same passion for the same old shows that I like. Of course, I remember as a child, they weren't old shows back then.
No, they weren't. You know, I first became interested in old-time radio. It was actually, for me, it was the late 70s. And I found a show by Hiram Brown called CBS Radio Mystery Theater. And it starred E.G. Marshall. And that's more or less what kicked off for me. I just couldn't get enough old-time radio after that. And that show started in the late 70s and ran to about 83. And it followed the everything that they did in the 50s and, or 40s and 50s. But yet, you know, here it was alive in the 80s, and a lot of people don't know that.
Well, I play it all night in the middle of the night, so this way I can hear my mother screaming at me. She was a good screamer. Ron, thank you so much for coming on the show. This was fun talking to you.
Well, my pleasure to be here.
All right, my friend. Take care.
I wet myself. Aren't you ashamed?
That's all, folks.